Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 140 in the series entitled The Mind and the Soul, How the Essence of the I Connects with the Brain. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, during the winter of 5762.
Good evening. Welcome. I want to commend all of those of you who, despite the weather that has been imposed upon us this evening, have not allowed it to hinder you from coming to learn the wisdom of the Alter Rebbe and the Tanya. I think, on the contrary, these weathers are the most conducive for real chassidus. Because these are the weathers that demonstrate to us that the world has a mysterious dimension to it that we don't always comprehend. I want to begin this evening's class with a story, a Hasidic episode, tale, that I think can serve as a useful introduction to the third and hopefully the last class on the 51st chapter of the Tanya. The great sage and transcriber of Hasidic tales of this past generation, Rabbi Shlomo Yosef Zevin, in his book Sipurei Chassidim, Chassidic Tales, in the section of Shavuos, relates the story. That's where I read it. One of the great Chassidic masters and sages was the tzaddik Reb Uri of Strelitsk. He was known as the Sorof. He's still known as the Sorof, which means the fireball, because, as Chassidim would say, he would literally get burnt up every day during davening. His prayers were so ecstatic and so heavenly that his entire self would be consumed in the prayer experience, to the extent that each morning before he went to shul to daven, he would bid farewell to his wife and to his children, saying that he doesn't know if he's going to make it out today. He's saying it's pikuach nefesh to daven, but for him it was pikuach nefesh not to daven. If he would have davened, it was 50-50. If he wouldn't daven, he wouldn't have any hope in this world anymore. This world wouldn't be for him. So it was safik pikuach nefesh in contrast to vadai pikuach nefesh. That's how I would answer your question. And each morning he would bid his wife farewell, and he always said that he was a student of the holy Reb Shlomo of Karlin. A student of Reb Aaron of Karlin, who was a student of the Magid and a close friend of the Alter Rebbe. So he would tell his wife before he went to davening, he says, I want to bid farewell to you, say goodbye, and I want to, you should know that all the transcripts in my drawers are not mine, they belong to my Rebbe, Reb Shlomo of Kalin. That was his final will and testament. The Sar Shalom, the Belzer Rebbe, Reb Shalom Rekeach, said that since Achi Hashilaini, there was no expert on Gilguli Neshamas, on reincarnation of souls like Reb Uri of Strelitzk. He passed away in Tovkuf Peivav, Chav Gimel Alul, in 1826. And when he passed away, many of his students accepted the leadership of the Helikei Ruzhiner, the holy Hasidic master of Yisrael of Ruzhin. Many of his Hasidim went to become his pupils. They were accustomed to the Sarov's davening. And his davening, as I mentioned, was an explosion of spiritual energy. The Ruzhiner prayed in a different way. The Ruzhiner was extremely calm and cool and silent. And when you observed him davening, you didn't see externally any extraordinary transformation or internal emotional overwhelming experience. So the first time they were in his shul, the Ruzhiner was standing in his place, very silently going through the davening, and they were exploding and screaming and dancing and weeping and shouting. And they would daven with unbelievable zeal and fire. So after davening, the Ruzhiner turns around and he looks at them and he smiles and he says, Encha b'seiseram. Quoting a pasuk in Tehillim, I will speak to you, Hashem, with a thought, with a silent thunder. Encha b'seiseram, I will respond to you with a silent thunder. And they got the message, and they tried to adjust to the Ruzhiner's spiritual path. In any case, this is the history of Reb Uri of Strelitzk. So Rav Zevin tells the following story. Once, they gave him a cup of coffee to drink. They also gave him a sugar cube to sweeten the coffee. For some reason, the student or disciple who presented him with the coffee, I don't know why, did not put in the sugar cube into the cup of coffee. Maybe he was unsure if his Rebbe wants sugar or not. He's a diabetic, if he could have sugar. This is before the days of, what is it called? Saccharin or sweeter, sweet and low. There were less diabetics then. Yeah. In any case, in one hand he gave Reb Uri the cup of coffee, in the other hand he gave him the sugar cube. Reb Uri didn't put the sugar into the cup of coffee, and he drank the coffee without sugar. When he finished drinking it, he opened his hand, and the people standing around saw that the entire sugar was sucked out of the cube. In his hand, the entire sugar was sucked out. All of its sweetness. There was just the external layer of the cube, and the whole sugar was out. So they were astonished. They were blown away. They couldn't believe what they're seeing. They asked Rebbe, what is this? So this is what he said. David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Ein shalom ba'atzmi mipnei chatasi. There's no peace in me because of my sin. And Sarov explained, the reason for the fact that there is a distinction and a dichotomy and a lack of peace between the various functions of the human soul in the limbs of a body is because the sin of Adam HaRishon. And because of that original sin, if you want to see, you must use exclusively the eye. And if you want to hear, you must use the ear. But somebody who heals his soul and rectifies all of his sins until to the core of his soul, then he experiences peace between all of the distinct and multitude of functions in the body. And through his hand, through the sensation of touch, he can suck out and absorb the entire sweetness existing in the sugar, just like through the sense of taste in the mouth. That's what the Buddha said. Now on the surface, it's difficult to understand, and it looks like a Hasidic tale, Hasidic Shemaisa. I opened up a Chumash, Parshas Yisro, describing Matan Torah, the revelation at Sinai. Zok de Pasuk, V'chol ha'am royim esakelus. The entire nation has seen the sounds that were emitted on the day that the Torah was given by Sinai. Zog de Ebenezer. The 1000s you're dealing with. The 11th century, Rabbeinu Avraham ben Ezra, the great Spanish Jewish philosopher and poet and linguist and astronomer. So Rabbeinu Avraham, the Ibn Ezra writes, he says, what does it mean that the entire nation saw the sounds? And I quote him, Ki kol ha'argoshes mischabreis al makim echad. Because all sensations connect to one place. And since all sensations ultimately can be traced back to one place and one source, therefore, if you experience that source, there's no distinction and fragmentation between the sensations. So you can experience the sensation of taste, which we can usually experience only through our taste buds in our mouth or around our mouth. We can experience that sensation through the sense of touch. Or in the case of Matan Torah, that which you experience through your sense of sight, of vision, through those cells that exist in the eye and around the eye, you can experience through your sense of hearing. And this is one of the major themes that Alter Rebbe expounds upon in chapter 51. With Alter Rebbe says that all of the various functions, including the senses, experienced through and in the limbs of the body, all begin within the brain. And in the brain, we have included, one has included all of the functions and all of the powers, and over there, all of the senses connect to one source, the source of the soul that resides in the brain. And Rebbe Uriyev, the son of, is saying here that Ein Shalom, how he explains the Pasuk in Tehillim, there's no peace because of the blemish. We're not in touch with the deeper layers of our soul. We're in touch with our senses only as they're experienced within the limbs of the body, particular limbs, distinct limbs, in which there is absolute differentiation. But here is a concept where a person is so connected and in sync with the deeper layer of energy, with the source of these sensations as they are in the brain, as they are in the soul which exists in the brain, where they all form one entity. On a deeper level, you can go even further. In the soul itself, prior even to its enclosement within the brain, the Alter Rebbe said, the soul itself encompasses all of the functions of our body. The power of vision, the power of hearing, the power of smell, the power of taste, the power of mobility. The ability, the powers of digestion, of reproduction, of circulation, and so on and so forth. All of these functions and powers exist previously in the soul itself. However, in the soul you have no fragmentation, no distinction and no division. The soul is an indivisible entity. It's not composite of distinct elements, and therefore it's not divisible into distinct elements. The Alter Rebbe goes so far to say that one cannot even grant the soul the definition of it being a source of life for the body. That is not the definition of the soul. You can't articulate and describe what is a soul. A soul is that entity which is the source of life for the body. The Alter Rebbe says that is not the definition of the soul. In fact, we have no words in our vocabulary to describe what is the nature of the soul. This element of the soul, the original soul, its pristine inner core identity, doesn't express itself in any particular organ of the body, in any bone, in any limb, even in any cell. Though this soul is found in the body, it's found identically in the entire body, and there's no function in the body that expresses the essential character or quality of the soul as it is in its own pristine essence. As it is in its own pristine essence. It transcends physical or spiritual dimensions in space, and although it encompasses all of the functions over there, all of the functions are totally unified. There is totally shalom ba'atzmi, peace in it, where all the functions are one and all sensations are one, and there's no fragmentation whatsoever. It transcends any divisiveness, even personality divisiveness, spiritual divisiveness. But this element of the soul is not meaningful for the brain or the body. They don't appreciate it. They don't get it. It doesn't lend itself to their anatomy, to their physiological structure. So therefore, no organ in the body, even the brain, expresses this element of the soul, this transcendental, pristine element of the soul, because their anatomy and their structure is not a receptacle to house it, to express it, to feel it, to sense it in any way. And after generations and generations, millennia, of people researching and searching and thinking and examining what is a soul, till today nobody can give an answer. What is the soul? What exactly is the soul? Nobody can give an answer. We appreciate elements of the soul. We know what different functions of the soul. We know accomplishments of the soul, achievements of the soul. What is the soul? Nobody can say. That's true. They tell a story that the Alter Rebbe had a chassid, and once the chassid walked into the Alter Rebbe, and the Alter Rebbe took him by surprise. He says, "Tell me," he says in Yiddish, "Zag mir, was is Gott?" Tell me, what is God? What is Hashem? It's the last question he thought he'll hear from the Alter Rebbe. Was is Gott? So he's taken aback. He moves back. He's shocked. So Alter Rebbe says, "And while you're at it, zog mir, was is aneshama und was is emuna? Tell me, what is a soul and what is faith?" So he finally, you know, he grabbed himself before fainting. He says, "Rebbe, ich weiß nicht. Rebbe, I don't know." So the Alter Rebbe responded and he said, "Unichzag, I say, as God is thus echad ha'emes v'shulav adayhu v'ein zolasei. Hashem is a one truth that He Himself is, and there's nothing else besides Him." And neshama, he says, Rabbeinu Yehi writes in Shari Tshuva, what's neshama? Makira is boida. She recognizes her creator, that's neshama. He says, "Unichzag, neshama is chelek alekam imal chelek me'atzmusay." Not a neshama is makira is boida. She recognizes her creator, which means it's an intellectual ability of perception. Chelek alekam imal, a part of its creator, a spark of infinity. And this is what the Alter Rebbe brings out here in chapter 51. The core, the pristine, the original picture of the soul is that it's pictureless. And the brain and the body can't appreciate this dimension of it. In this dimension, all of the functions and abilities and powers that will later be expressed in the body are included. But there's total unity between them. There's no distinction between them. In one place that Tzemach Tzedek writes, the grandson of the Alter Rebbe writes in Eir HaTorah and Parshas Matos, that the sense of smell comes closest to expressing something of the pristine nature of the soul. That's what he says. He says, the nose, Vayipach ba'apov nishmas chayim. Hashem blew into Adam Arishan's nostrils, Nishmas Chayim. He has the chaytim, the noses, the shar, v'yitziyel, atzam aneshama. It's the exit, somehow, for the essence of the soul. And he quotes chapter 51, that the essence is not expressed through any organ, even through the brain, and it's connected to the entire body identically, because no organ expresses it in a revealed way. None is a receptacle that is conducive to express its pristine, transcendental, identityless quality. But he says somehow the nose, he says, aroma, odor, smell touches a person in the deepest way, deeper than any other sensory experience in the body, and that's where there's some type of expression of the essence of the soul. I don't know what it means, but that's what the Tzemach Tzedek writes in one place. And it's interesting that when you read chapter 51, the Alter Rebbe goes through and discusses the different functions of the body that the soul imparts to it through the brain. And Alter Rebbe gives a few examples, and Afayin Aleph Amid Aleph, the eye to see, the ear to hear, the mouth to speak, and the feet to move, to walk. Why doesn't he mention the nose? Achaytam l'arich, the nose to smell. Because in this section of chapter 51, the Alter Rebbe is trying to bring out the individualistic functions that the soul imparts to the brain. I'm sorry, that the brain takes in from the soul and the brain imparts to the body. In contrast to the essential soul, to the pristine original soul, which pervades the entire body identically, and somehow the nose is connected to that more than the other organs, so the Alter Rebbe would not include the nose there. And we see the Gemara says in Brachas, Kol HaNeshama, the Gemara says, Eizehu, concerning smell, that smell is an enjoyment, Sha'aneshama nenis b'yvaloi haguf. The soul enjoys it and not the body. Question is, what does the Gemara mean? The body doesn't enjoy a good smell. There's taka story with the Alter Rebbe, and I think this is very much connected with what the Tzemach Tzedek writes. It's a very interesting story. One of the chassidim of the Alter Rebbe once bought him a present, a zilberne tabak pushkala, a silver snuff box. It was beautiful. It was a glaring, aristocratic, royal silver snuff box. So you should be able to snuff tobacco. Shmek tabak. One of the great ancient Jewish taivas elam haza. One of the great Jewish enjoyments.
That herring,
bagels, gefilte fish. A mikveh, a schwitzbad. One of the... So this is what Alter Rebbe said. Alter Rebbe responded right away. He said, I'll say it in Yiddish. He said, so the ein eved in the ganze guf was is nishta bal taiva. Vul men es eich verstoppen mit taiva. Which means there's only one organ in the entire body that is not vulnerable to be overtaken by materialistic unholy cravings. And that's the nose. Smell is not corrupt. So the Alter Rebbe says, this we're going to impose on the nose also the quality of taiva, that it should start engaging in cravings.
It can be corrupted.
Yes. So what happened was, he removed the threat. The story goes that he used the cover of the case of the snuff box that was made out of silver, and he broke it off from the rest of the case, and he used it for a mirror for his tefillin.
He unhinged it,
and he used it for a mirror to make sure that his tefillin on the shalrosh is between his eyes, on the sfora between the eyes. Parenthetically, somebody once told a story in front of the Tzemach Tzedek, and when he told the story, he said, the Zayde, your grandfather, at abgebrochen. He broke off, like I said, he broke off the cover of the case, and he used it for tefillin. The Tzemach Tzedek responded and he said, the Zayd is nishgiven shayach tzebrechen. My grandfather was incapable of breaking. What he did was he removed the thread that connected the cover to the rest of the box. And when he removed the thread, he unhinged it, as you said. Then he can use it for his tefillin. He was very unfond of the expression that he broke it. The Zayd is nishgiven shayach tzebrechen. In any case, it's interesting, Taka, that it's brought in Chassidus. The Bnei Yisoschar has a whole shmuz on this in his discourses on Cheshvan. The only sense that was not from the five senses, that was not corrupted during the Eitz Hadas, was the sense of smell. Reb Nachman brings it in Lekutei Maran. The Pasuk says in Bereishis, Vateira ha'isha ki toiv ha'eitz l'maichel. The woman Chava saw that the tree is good to eat. So we see that her sense of sight was involved. She saw the tree, it looked splendorous. Vatikach mipirioi, she took the fruit, her sense of touch was involved in the Eitz Hadas. Vatoichal, she ate it, which obviously was experienced by her sense of taste. Vayishmu eskoil Hashem Elokim esalach b'gan. Following that, Adam and Chava heard the voice of Hashem who was walking in the garden. Their sense of hearing was involved. The only sense that they didn't experience, the Eitz Hadas, was the sense of smell. And therefore he says, that sense remains the most refined and the most in tune with the spiritual essence of the soul and with the godly essence of the soul. We see, you never hear about a person who went corrupt in smelling. Did you hear this Rasha Merusha, this lowlife? Did you hear what he smelled last night? With eating, with seeing, with your hands, stealing and other things. I mean, they can be very corrupt. And we know our sense of taste is attracted to a lot of things that are unhealthy and sometimes immoral. The same is true with our sense of touch and certainly our eyes and certainly our ears. Most things that you hear, I mean, some people, most things that either come, that they hear could be total, that could be gossip and such types of things or negative talk. But the sense of smell, you have to work. You could corrupt it, but it needs more work. And that's the reason, that's how he explains what it means that the soul enjoys smell, not the body. Of course the body enjoys it, but it remains a soul experience. It remains a refined experience, much more in tune with the pristine holiness of the soul. And that's the reason, he says, that Saturday night, Mitzrayim Shabbos, the first thing we do is we smell. Because we know that Shabbos is the reality that transcends Eitz Hadas. Shabbos is the level of Eitz HaChaim, the tree of life. Saturday night, Mitzrayim Shabbos, we go back into the world of Eitz Hadas, the world of good and evil. And that's why the first welcome, we try to welcome the Jew through smelling, in other words, connecting to that part of the body that has not been corrupted since. Could be this is connected with what the Tzemach Tzedek says as well. That's another element where it's expressed in the nose. But in any case, that's what he writes. And it's interesting, Alter Rebbe doesn't use the nose as an example. Yes? I hear. You're saying they heard Hashem in the garden is not connected to the sin. She heard the snake. You mean the snake spoke to her? The snake spoke to her and she heard, listened to the snake. That's possible. I think for some reason, the Bnei Yisrael brings this verse. But you're asking why not better? She heard the snake. That would be mamish part of the... That was the beginning of it. That would be... But I don't know if it says the words, she heard the snake. It says that the snake spoke to her. The words that they heard say concerning Hashem walking in the garden. But it's a point well taken. Well, that's not hearing. The hiding is not hearing. Yes.
There are a couple of questions I have. There are a lot of people whose appetite for food, they're walking through sense of smell. And part of taste is smell. And B...
But smelling it is not a sin.
Right. It's true. You'll have to smell kazo. But there are certain perfumes that a man's not allowed to smell fully. There is such a thing as a sin connected with smell.
Fine. You shouldn't go there. Let him not go there. But smell itself is not a sin. You mean Pesach chametz? But this is all the pristine, let's not forget the context of our discussion. This is all the pristine, original soul in which all of the functions and all of the powers are totally unified in one essence that transcends the vocabulary that can be picked up by the brain and any part of the body. And therefore this element of the soul, its core, is found in the entire body identically. And this part, dimension of the body, its core cannot be defined by the fact that it serves as the source of life for the body. If you want to describe what is a soul and what is its greatness, Dr. Rebbe says you can't describe its greatness by saying, you know what a soul is? It's responsible for everything that goes on in your body. True, when you examine the human anatomy and the human organism, it's nothing less than magical. When you examine how the brain works every moment of our life, it is literally mind-staggering. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But despite the greatness of the soul in this sense, this does not capture its core, its essence. Its essence transcends even its magical impact on the body. However, in this indivisible essence, listen carefully, it's important to get this. Within this indivisible essence is also included this quality, the capacity of the soul to grant life and function to a body. This capacity is meaningful to the body. This is the element of the soul that is appreciated through the brain and the body. The core essence of the soul totally transcends physical structure, and therefore you can put it in the brain, but the brain doesn't appreciate it. It doesn't talk to the brain. Doesn't talk to any part of the body. So it's there, but it's not expressed via any organ or limb, even via the cells in the brain. The neurons, even via the 100 million and nerve cells that exist in the brain. However, within this indivisible soul, there's also a particular capacity. The capacity to grant life and design to a body. So the Alter Rebbe says in a very powerful, fascinating idea. When the brain meets up with the soul, when Hashem creates the shidduch, the match between the soul and the brain picks up on one element of the soul. On the pristine core of the soul, the brain doesn't pick up on it. The brain picks up on this capacity, absorbed and included in the indivisible soul, the capacity to give life and function to a body. And what the brain does, the Alter Rebbe says, is the brain draws out of the soul its capacity to grant vitality and animation and functional powers to a body. And it also draws out of the soul its ability to give the human life personality and character. And Alter Rebbe added, since we know that the body has 248 components, Evarim, they are enumerated, by the way, in the Mishnah, in the first chapter of Tractate Ahalois, one of the less popular tractates of Mishnayos that I learned. I mentioned this because I in yeshiva today, I asked some of my students if they ever heard that a body has 248 organs. They said they have heard it millions of times. Millions. I mean, they've heard it tens or hundreds of times. So could you tell me what those 248 organs are? They don't know. Mishnayos Ahalos is an unpopular, but over there the Mishnah goes through all of the 248 organs. And each organ has its own design and its own function. In addition to this, the Kabbalah talks about 365 Gidim. Now this is already, I never saw it enumerated. I think this is much more obscure. What exactly are Gidim? Sometimes it's translated as sinews, sometimes as vessels, sometimes as arteries, sometimes as nerves. It's very hard to put your finger on how many nerves or arteries there are because there's the offshoots and the branches and the sub-branches, but this doesn't say in Mishnah and Gemara, it's interesting. This is in Kabbalah and Zohar. The concept of 248 is in Mishnayos clearly, with every limb enumerated in Olos. Gidim says in the Zohar, 365 Gidim. The Rambam will not say 365 sinews. The Gemara says in Makas Dav Chav Gimel, 248 positive mitzvahs correspond to 248 limbs in the body. 365 negative mitzvahs correspond to 365 days of the solar year. In Zohar, Parshas Vayishlach, the Zohar says that the Malach, the angel who was bickering with Yaakov, or whoever it was bickering with Yaakov, managed to impair the Gid HaNosha, the sciatic nerve, the Gid is a nerve over there. And the Zohar says, really, he wanted to impair all of the 365 nerves. And if that would have happened, Yaakov would have not had hope, and there would have been not one day of the year that would have had hope. What he did was, he impaired the Gid HaNosha, the sciatic nerve, and that corresponds to the day of Tisha B'Av, the ninth day of Av. Each day corresponds to one of the nerves. I mention this here because the Alter Rebbe brings something out with this number. The Alter Rebbe keeps on repeating this number, and the Alter Rebbe says as follows. That what does the brain do when the soul meets the brain? The brain draws forth and brings to a revelation 613 signals from the soul. The soul on its own does not experience these 613 signals in a vivid, defined way. They are part and parcel of an indivisible entity. But the brain picks up and draws out that which it relates to. The brain is sensitive to the music of the soul that is relative to a body. Other elements of the soul the brain doesn't know about. It's not for the brain. Totally transcends the brain. That's Etzem HaNefesh. The brain filters it out totally. If the brain would experience that element, there wouldn't be a brain as we know it. would be a mystical hemorrhage. What do you mean? Yes. Yeah. The brain experiences that which its structure is conducive to experience and then to transmit. So the brain draws forth 613 signals, and they all exist in the brain. And here, there is already not that level of unity that is experienced in the soul itself. When these 613 signals are in their pristine and abstract source, they're all one. In the brain, we have already experienced a particular feature of the soul as a power plant of the body. Now you can begin giving definitions to the soul. It's a power plant of the body. It's a spiritual blueprint of the entire body and all of its functions. It's a master and a governor of 60 billion cells. That's a very powerful definition of the soul, but it's not its pristine definition. That it governs 60 billion cells, which is approximately the amount of cells that are situated in our entire body. And they're all governed by the brain through the soul, which is in the brain. That's already a definition that can be given to the soul only when it is filtered and redefined through the brain. The next stage is, the third stage is, so first stage is we have the pristine soul on its own. Second stage is when the brain meets the soul and it draws forth and it brings to an actualization 613 signals. Of course, each of these signals contains an array of details and offsprings and offshoots. And the third stage is now the brain issues forth commands to the entire body. The brain now transmits commands, signals, waves, energy, life to every single part of the body. The brain takes these 613 signals and it imparts them to each particular limb, giving it and granting it its particular energy, design, function, responsibility, and mission, and so on. This, by the way, explains, the Tzemach Tzedek also explains, in Eira Teira, somewhere else, Eira Teira Parshas Nitzavim, the concept of reincarnation. We know there's a concept of Gilgulim, of reincarnation, that a human soul could be reincarnated in an animal, and sometimes in a tree, and sometimes in a stone. So Tzemach Tzedek puts it in a very interesting way. He says, when the soul goes into the behemoth, to the animal, Ayei HaSeichel, Ayei HaChesed, HaGvura, HaTeferes, where is the seichel of the soul? Where is that powerful expression of a soul's nature? When the soul gets reincarnated into a rock, into a tree, what happened to the soul? Where is it? If it's there, it should be there. It should express itself. So that he explains it based on this chapter of Tanya. The etzem of the soul, the pristine element of the soul, doesn't lend itself to be appreciated or expressed through any physical reality. Not even through the physical structure of a human being. So you have the entire soul in an animal, he says, just like you have the entire soul in a human body, and it's not experienced not by the body and not by the human body and not by the animal body. What the human body experiences and expresses of the soul is one particular feature, which is a ray of a ray of a ray of its true core and essence. And the animal's anatomy, the animal's brain, is not a receptacle even to experience the 613 signals that the human brain is a receptacle for. So those elements are not experienced in the human animal, but the entire soul in its core and in its pristine essence is found either in the rock or in the tree or in the animal. The Avodas HaKodesh, I mentioned him a few weeks ago, Rabbeinu Meir Ben Gabe, one of the great Kabbalists, writes a fascinating thing, that the reason that in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Holy Temple, one of the most important services was karbonis offerings. He says, why did this become such a central feature in Jewish religious life? So the Alter Rebbe explains in his discourses that basically constitutes and reflects our work. Our work is to deal with the animal in us. We each have a cow, a sheep, a goat. Some of us have bulls, some of us have cows. Everybody has their own animal, and the process of life is to deal with your animal, and it's not easy. It's not easy. It's coarse, it's brute, it's egotistical, it's selfish, it's beastly. The Avodas HaKodesh says that in the generations of the temples, there were myriads and myriads of souls reincarnated into animals. And these animals made their way to the Beis HaMikdash. And every animal that was offered in the Beis HaMikdash, this is what he writes, was the method through which these souls were sublimated. But in any case, it's not this place now to discuss Gilgulim reincarnation. It's a separate subject. But based on this, the Tzemach Tzedek explains the concept of reincarnation based on this chapter in Tanya. You're asking a question that we say that the neshama, even before it comes into the body, it learns and it feels. So that means it experiences a power of intellect and it experiences emotions of love and awe. That's a good question. I think the answer is as follows. The Ramban writes on the Pasuk, Oysa malachav rucha, Oysa malachav rucha, is Mesharis of Eish Loyet, and Baruch Hinafshi in Tehillim. Hashem makes his angels, rucha, spirits, his messengers, his servants, Eish Loyet, glowing flames. So the Ramban says, and Alter Rebbe brings it, I believe, in the 40th chapter of Tanya, that malachim have a nefesh and a guf. You remember? Malachim have a chaymer and a tzura. Kol malachim in bali chaymer v'tzura in chapter 40. All of the malachim have a chaymer and a tzura, which is similar to a soul and a body. Source is the Ramban. So the question is, what does it mean malachim have a body? They obviously don't have a physical body. They're not angels. What it means is that they have some instruments through which the soul is expressed. So it's possible that even in the higher world, the pristine essence of the soul experiences some type of case, of container, which is not a physical body, but it's similar in spirituality to the properties of the brain and the body that allow different elements of the soul to be expressed and actualized. That's possible. Levushim for the neshama. Levushim, garments which are spiritual. No, but there would be similar to the brain. He's asking a question. The soul in the higher worlds, we talk about particular functions. We talk about the soul seeing, the soul perceiving, the soul understanding, the soul feeling. These are individualistic functions.
The people reported near-death experiences that the soul has these things, but they experience it all at once. So sort of like the desire with Roulette.
That's interesting. You want to say that in the higher worlds, the soul experiences all of these functions at once, similar to what the Saruf said, that he
had it in the body.
He had it even in the body because he transcended the Chet Tzadas. I mean, it's a fascinating thing that somebody should have said it about himself. I think it just gives a tangible visualization to what the Alter Rebbe is saying here. That he, Pashut, held a cube of sugar in his hand, and he had the ability to experience the taste of it. He drank the coffee with sugar. It was taken out. Because he was connected to that level of soul where all the functions are one. It's possible that in the higher worlds there is that type of experience, but I'm not sure. What people who had near-death experiences described the unison.
The unison that you're talking about.
I see. Okay. Now let's continue. We're on page 142. The second to the last line from the bottom, the parentheses. Daf Ayin Aleph Amid Beis. Now the Alter Rebbe adds, in the parentheses, an interesting but important detail.